Welcome back to Inside Rock. On this episode, Rock Hurts, we're going to be talking about some concert mishaps and bad behavior by some of your favorite artists. Well, you know, I've been to a lot of concerts over my lifetime, and I've never seen some of the wacky shit that we're about to talk about on this show.
Well, and doing some of the research, I looked at some of these stories and news articles of it. Did that really happen?
I mean, it's hard to believe.
It's crazy stuff.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's consistent across the entire rock world that all these bands behaving badly, not only on stage, but in the hotels and in public, and just some of the things that they did is like really hard to believe.
You know, if any one of us did some of these things, we'd be in jail. But only, guys, like rock and roll, it's okay.
Well, how about some of the fans? I mean, some of the stories include like the behavior by the fans. I mean, which I guess you should expect that, but.
Well, I mean, a lot of these fans are drunk and drugged up before they even get to the concert, and then they get there, and their behavior is off the charts.
Are we talking about the fans or the bands now? Because both. It sounds like both.
Both, yeah, yeah, both. So you get a huge group of people who are high and don't know what they're doing.
It's all part of the experience.
It's all part of the experience. So, I love that.
Anyway,
yeah. How many times are we going to quote Christmas Vacation? Because it seems like we're always quoting Christmas Vacation.
Are you serious, Clark?
Whatever, Russ. Whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's a great movie. Yeah, yeah, you have to pick up little quotes that we put in our podcast, and we try to stump each other with movie quotes and see if we can actually name the movie that it comes from. But anyway, we digress.
Yes.
Hey, we're talking about bad behavior by fans and by performers. But fans have caused a lot of shit, too. I mean, one of the first ones we're going to talk about is David Bowie's Lollipop in the Eye incident in Norway in 2004.
Yeah. What's the matter with that?
No.
My first question was, how do you take a lollipop in the eye? How does it get lodged in your eye?
Well, it was the stick part.
Yeah, well, I saw the picture. You showed it to me, and I thought it was Photoshopped. I don't think it was.
No, I don't think so either. It was like the stick part. Now, it did lodge between his eyeball and the lid, thank God, because he almost put his eye out.
And that was his bad eye, too.
His bad eye, yeah. And he suffered from something called anisocoria.
Anisocoria?
Anisocoria, which means the pupil in one eye is bigger than the other. But it was caused from a punch in the head from one of his friends when they were fighting over a girl they both met.
Yeah, back in grade school.
Yeah, but he's had it for almost his whole life. But he's got one bad eye and this lollipop thrown by a fan.
Well, at least it went in the bad eye.
That's what he said.
I'd be pissed if it was in the good eye.
That's what he said. He's on stage and he said, well, you know, I've got one bad eye, so at least you hit me in the bad one.
You know what? Bowie continued to perform.
Yeah, and he said, you know what? As a punishment to you people for doing this to me, I'm going to play extra long tonight.
He paid for what, 2 hours and 20 minutes? He pulled a Bruce Springsteen kind of.
Yeah, he just kept on going.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, Springsteen's known for his long concerts, but.
But
I
what
mean,
possesses somebody to throw a lollipop at the performer and hit him in the head, let alone the eye?
Well, maybe he was trying to do a good thing. Here's a lollipop, and he was just aiming for his mouth.
He missed.
Yeah, he should have had the big screen up, like in the Blues Brothers. Remember when they're playing Rawhide in the Blues Brothers at the Country and Western Bar?
Bob's Country Bar? Bunker.
That's right. And they had the screen up, and they're throwing beer bottles at him.
That's a great scene.
And maybe Bowie should have had that.
Yeah, well, maybe he did a future concerts. But yeah, he was lucky. He didn't have any damage to his eye, and he continued to play for 2 hours and 20 minutes.
So that happened in June of 2004.
In Norway.
Yeah, Norwegian Wood Festival in Oslo, Norway.
So speaking of fans behaving badly, another very famous situation happened at the Altamont Speedway Free Festival, 1969, with the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, that was a very, very popular event at the time.
Yeah, and so you'd have to set this up, though, why this all happened, is that the Stones, who did they hire for bodyguard and crowd protection and crowd control?
Well, on the advice of the Grateful Dead, they hired the Hells Angels. The reason they did is because the stage was only 39 inches high. it was really low to the ground. So they were really, you know, right there, right in front of the crowd.
With 300,000 people in front of it.
Yeah. All,
you know, that's
all,
a good thing to
all stone, point right?
out. Yeah. 300,000 drugged up fans.
Yeah. So they hired the Hell's Angels to guard the stage.
And then what happened?
Well, some chick pulls out a handgun.
Yeah. Her name was Meredith Hunter.
A fan pulls out a handgun.
Just a right, teenager,
yeah,
too.
Right at this, right near the stage.
Yeah.
And, well, you could imagine the Hell's Angels probably didn't take to that very kindly, so.
No, they actually subdued her and ended up killing her.
Yeah, she died.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was tragic.
But, I mean, who pulls out a gun?
What was she thinking?
Exactly.
I don't know.
I don't know. I guess we'll never know.
Okay, it's bad enough you're going to pull a gun out at a concert right next to the stage, but let's do it in front of the Hell's Angels that are guarding the stage.
Yeah.
Now, well, I don't know if the Hell's Angels, did they have that reputation? I know they got it after that, but did they have that reputation as being dangerous?
Hell's Angels?
Yeah, I mean, back in 69, I don't know.
No, my gosh. They've always been a good bunch of guys.
Just in case they're listening.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, let's not go there. They're nice guys.
Yeah,
they're fine.
Okay. All right.
Speaking of the Stones, Keith Richards. How old? I think he like died 30 years ago, and they just stuff him, and they put him on stage.
I know, right?
He's preserved or something.
Actually, with 2020, has anyone checked on Keith lately? Is he okay?
Somebody, if you're listening, go check on Keith.
Somebody check Keith.
Just hold a mirror under his nose, see if anything's happening.
Nah, 2020 couldn't touch Keith.
Well, one of the things that Keith actually keeps saying that he's done is that he's once snorted the ashes of his deceased father.
Yeah, so?
just saying.
Wow.
Yeah, ashes. I mean, like, let's leave that one alone. Yeah, speaking of ashes, the Guns N' Roses Metallica concert. There was almost a head full of ashes for one of the performers.
Yeah, well, James Hetfield, right?
Yeah. This is in Montreal, 1992.
Yeah. He almost went up in flames. Yeah, one of the pyrotechnics went off. He went close to him.
He was standing on the stage where he wasn't supposed to be.
Yeah, and the pyrotechnic went off and lit him ablaze, his head.
Yeah, second and third degree burns, and he had to rush him to the hospital, and Metallica had to cancel the rest of their set. Now, Guns N' Roses was supposed to come on after them, and they were late. Not only were they late, but Axl Rose cited voice and audio problems, and
I bet you that went over well.
And cut their set short. So not only did the crowd not see the rest of Metallica, they got a short, late and short version of Guns N' Roses.
So something tells me there was tear gas involved.
Yeah, the military had to be brought in for the riots that happened outside the concert with all the disgruntled fans, and they had to use tear gas to get it under control.
Do they have video of that, Metallica's?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I've seen the one of like Gene Simmons. I guess he's said that he's set his hair ablaze about six or seven times. The first time though, December 31st, 1973, is an old video on YouTube.
Wow, that's old, eh?
Yeah. And he was panicking, that's for sure, which I guess any normal person would.
So the first time he did it was when they were playing Firehouse, and you know, the idea of the fire breathing came from Kiss's first manager. It wasn't Gene Simmons' idea. It was the first manager's idea. Yeah. Crazy. You know, he can breathe fire 15 feet, and he's rated in the top five fire breathers in the world.
Well, he's got a lot of practice.
No kidding.
Yeah. Now, talking about Kiss, you're talking about crazy performers and crazy band members.
Mm-hmm.
The stories about Ace Frehley are legendary. What's the one about the perfume? What was that one?
Well, he once drank a whole bottle of perfume because Paul Stanley told him that there was alcohol in perfume. So Ace chugged the whole bottle.
Like, he didn't have enough money to buy a bottle of booze?
It was right there. He figured, what the heck? I guess they were short on cash. Who knows?
The best story I love about Ace Frehley is that him and Peter Criss, they're high.
Go figure.
You go figure. And they're playing in Sweden, and it's in between
performances, and they're at this restaurant, and they're sitting there, and they're both high, and it's a kind of restaurant where there's a big pond in the middle, and the shrimp is a shrimp restaurant. All they serve was shrimp.
Shrimp boat.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. So the chef is in the middle of this pond.
Oh, yeah.
You order your shrimp, whatever you do, and he puts it in a little boat, and you have a remote control at your table.
That sounds like fun.
And brings the boat and the shrimp that's loaded in there over to your table, and you pick it up.
Oh,
nice. So Ace and Peter are sitting there, and Peter's almost comatose. And Ace looks over at the boats. He looks at Peter, Chris. He says, "Peter, I'm going to fuck up those boats."
Why not?
And Peter looks at him and goes, "Do what you got to do, dude."
So what do you do?
So Ace stands up and screams. And he says, "I'm fucking Godzilla." And he jumps into the pond and starts picking up the boats and throwing them all over and just crashing around like he's Godzilla beating up the little boats. And Peter Chris looks at him, looks forward, and passes out face first into his salad.
Rock and roll, baby.
Rock and roll, baby. Needless to say, they weren't asked to come back to that restaurant ever again.
Oh. Wow. Love Kiss.
Oh, awesome. Man, I love that story. Yeah. I'm going to fuck up those boats. Yeah, so, you know, food at Rockers. I mean, sometimes the food doesn't go that well. And the food on stage, good old Ozzy mistook.
Well, that wasn't food.
Food? No, but he took a bite out of it like it was.
What, the Batsicle?
The Batsicle, yeah. Now, he's saying he thought it was a fake bat. But
it was a real bat.
It was a real bat. And he ended up biting the head off of it. And I guess he was too far into the bite and realized it was real and kept on going.
That made a big deal.
Oh,
that was huge. Oh yeah, man, that was very controversial, as you can imagine.
Well, and after the show, the manager and they said, "We got to take you for rabies shots, man." So he went for complete rabies treatment after biting the head off a bat.
He probably would have had to gone for shots for a lot of other stuff he's done, too.
I was going
to
say, that's probably the last of his worries, yeah, biting really the head off a bat. But who would bring a bat to a concert?
Well, that's the other question.
Where'd the bat come from?
Exactly. Well, it could have been in the concert. I don't know if it was indoor or outdoors.
It was probably a prop. I mean, why would, let's just grab this bat. But I mean, it had to be a prop of some sort.
A real dead bat?
I don't know.
Well, Ozzy's famous for a lot of stuff. And 1984, when they're on this tour with Motley Crue.
Yeah.
It's reported that Ozzy was looking for something to snort and couldn't find any cocaine, so he snorted a line of live ants.
There you go.
Yeah.
Why not?
Any port in a storm.
Wow.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a weird way to snort.
Well, we could probably do a whole show on Ozzy, to be honest.
That's true. Crazy train.
Tony Iommi from Black Sabbath, the lead guitarist, we all know who he is. He used to play pranks on Bill Ward, and he's
the drummer.
The drummer, yeah. So he used to put rubbing alcohol on him and then light it, and it would burn off quickly, you know, just as a joke. On his skin, yeah.
Right.
But this one time, I mean, Iommi said this in his autobiography, he poured some alcohol on him and lit it. But because he poured it on his clothes as well, the clothes absorbed it, so it didn't burn off right away. Bill Ward started to panic, laid on the ground, was rolling around trying to put it out, and Tony Iommi thought he was just playing along with the joke and dumped almost a bucket more of alcohol on him, and the guy went up in flames.
What?
That's what he said.
Now, was this on stage or was it in the change room?
No, I think it was backstage. It wasn't on stage.
Were there fire extinguishers handy?
I don't know. That's all he said. But I mean, Bill Ward didn't die, but apparently Bill Ward had a problem with alcohol.
You think? After that?
I mean, consuming it, not being poured on him. I mean, both,
well,
actually.
Both now.
Yeah.
Well, that just sounds irresponsible.
I would say so.
All right.
So anyway, that's Tony Iommi.
And then there's Rod Stewart. You got to get back to, actually, we're going to skip this one. We got to talk about this. Rod Stewart had a different way of doing cocaine, allegedly. And what was that?
Well, there are a number of different orifices in your body.
Yes.
He decided to allegedly,
yes,
try it anally.
Why?
Well, he was afraid of the health impacts of continuing to do coke through his nostrils and what the damage would be on his health.
So let's put it up his ass. Yeah. And let's see how, maybe that's better.
Yeah, that's the least of your problems at that point.
God.
So they're concerned with their health. I mean, you know, you don't want to do anything that's unhealthy.
That's nuts, man.
I know. So, yeah, I mean, their health, honestly, though, I mean, their stage presence and the exposure they put themselves to from a safety perspective and their own personal health is pretty scary sometimes. I mean, take Frank Zappa's experience. London Rainbow Theater, 1971.
Mm-hmm.
They were in their encore, and they were playing I Want to Hold Your Hand as a cover for the Beatles, which obviously is not typical for Frank Zappa.
No, I've been saying
that. And
the
Mothers of Invention. So apparently what they first thought of was this disgruntled fan jumps out of the crowd and pushes Frank off stage,
mm-hmm,
down into the orchestra pit, which is, I can't remember how far down
that's
was.
That's a concrete floor.
It was a concrete floor, and he fell pretty far, and he suffered a whole bunch of injuries. I mean, a number of different breaks. His arm was semi-paralyzed. He had broken ribs. He had a hole in the back of his head, a fractured leg, and he was in bad shape for a long, long time. And as it turns out later, this guy who pushed him off the stage later admitted, his name was Howell, that his girlfriend had expressed to him an infatuation with Frank Zappa, and he was extremely jealous. And
so Frank Zappa was aware of this? Was he aware of the girl's infatuation with him?
No, he didn't know who the girl was.
So what the hell is he doing playing I Want to Hold Your Hand as an encore? Come on.
Well, that's a little suspect, isn't it?
That's a little suspect.
No, I don't think he knew the guy's girlfriend. There's nothing that suggests
maybe she
that
was in the crowd and he was looking at her when he was singing it.
Well, if you're going to do that stuff, get the Hell's Angels in
that's
front.
That's right, exactly. Oh, exactly. Well, fans integrate with the performers in a lot of different ways. Well, we were just talking about The Who. And Keith Moon. And yeah, what happened with Keith Moon?
Which
didn't happen. Yeah, no. No, the one where the fan had to come out of the audience.
Well, the 19-year-old, yeah. So yeah. There, Keith Moon, before the show, I guess his nerves were on edge, and he wanted to, instead of taking a sedative, he wanted
PCP.
To calm his nerves. He took PCP.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're about, about halfway through the set.
Won't Get Fooled Again is what they were playing.
And that's an epic drum song, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And Keith Moon is playing erratically, and they had to stop him. And
he actually slumped over.
He slumped over in his kit, yeah.
Yeah.
So they had to stop, and they took him off. And Pete Townsend addressed the crowd. He says, anybody know how to play drums? He actually asked the crowd.
Yeah.
And this 19-year-old,
Scott Halpin,
jumps up on stage and gets behind the drum kit and finishes the rest of the show with The Who.
That's once in a lifetime.
Right?
You think?
That's crazy.
That is unbelievable.
How old do you know?
He was 19.
He's 19.
How long ago did this happen? Like, this has got to be, what?
This is 1973.
So yeah. I wonder if they have any videos of that.
Yeah, I don't know. Probably not. But before cell phones,
it'd have to be
filmed,
right? It'd have to be filmed as somebody filming the concert.
But, well, if there is, we'll put it in our show notes. We'll include it.
Yeah, we'll take a look.
Yeah, we'll take a look.
Now, speaking of Keith Moon.
Now, hold on a second. Before that, you know, they gave this kid, as a reward, they gave him a concert jacket, and they all signed it, right?
Right.
What a memento, right?
Yeah.
Well, it got stolen.
Oh, no.
Somebody stole the kid's jacket, yeah. Isn't that crazy?
So if you're out there and you've got this jacket, give him back the damn jacket.
That's right. Get it dry clean first, then give it back.
Yeah, no kidding. Anyway, so Keith Moon.
Yeah.
Legendary drummer, lots of stories. But one of the very first TV appearances The Who had was on the Smothers Brothers TV show. And The Who was known for smashing all their equipment at the end of their show. They just smash everything and cause mayhem. Well, they did the same thing on the Smothers Brothers show. And while they were in the process of smashing all their equipment, Keith Moon kicks his drum set off of the drum stand.
As he does it.
He had put fireworks inside the drum kit.
Secretly, though. The rest of the band members didn't know that.
They didn't know.
Yeah, that's right.
And when he kicked it off, they all went off at the same time and caused a huge explosion.
A bomb went off.
Yeah, if you watch the video, yeah. I'll put a link in the show notes.
Roger Daltrey is standing probably about 3 or 4 feet right in front of the drum kit.
And he was pissed.
Why is that?
Well, he associates his hearing loss based on that evening.
That explosion.
Yeah.
Well, he was close to the explosion.
Oh, he was right beside it. You see him duck like what? And they all look back at Keith like, what the hell happened? What was that? Like they had no idea.
Actually, the video is kind of hilarious.
Yeah, we just watched it.
I love the part where Tommy Smothers comes out at the end with Tommy Smothers known for carrying around his acoustic guitar with the strap around his neck, and he comes walking out and Roger Daltrey is obviously still suffering, like ringing in his head from the explosion. Takes a look at Tommy Smothers, and Tommy Smothers doesn't know what to say. He's walking around. Roger walks over to him, takes the guitar off and takes a strap off and beats the guitar and smashes it to smithereens while Tommy just watches him. Yeah, anyway, I'll put that link on the show notes.
Dick and Tommy Smothers, the Smothers Brothers.
They were very controversial at their time. They were, for sure.
They're great. They're funny.
I love them. But they ended up getting canceled because they were too politically incorrect for the time, which now is like nothing.
Well, that episode didn't help, probably.
Did not help them. No, it did not help them. So, so speaking of throwing guitars around.
Oh, Dave Grohl?
No.
Which one?
No. Nirvana, 1992, at the MTV Awards.
Yeah.
Chris Novoselic.
Oh, that one.
Oh, that was the,
Yeah. They're playing the end, and they typically throw their guitars around, too. He throws his up in the air. It comes down and hits him right square in the head and almost knocks him out.
Tell me there's a video of that.
There's a video of that, too.
Oh, man.
Yeah, a video of that, too. And you see the video. He's laying on the ground. The rest of the guys are still playing. He's rolling around totally dazed and out of it. Finally, he kind of crawls off stage.
What an idiot. It's all part of the show.
He's got a huge gash in his head. Oh, that's hilarious. So he gets backstage. And Brian May is there, and he says, this guy needs something to drink. He has a big glass of champagne for him. So they're giving him medical attention and ask him to sign off this form as a waiver, right? He just signed it because he wanted the champagne that Brian May was holding. So he signed it and downed the champagne. Right, Brian May from Queen, by the way.
Wow. If you don't know that, you shouldn't be listening to this show.
I know, exactly.
Well, we all know who Jim Morrison is.
Yeah, The Doors.
From The Doors, yeah.
Yeah.
There's one story kind of stuck in my mind. It was a show they were doing in Miami back in 1969, showing up very late for a gig. And I guess during the process of getting there, Jim was obviously drinking and a lot.
I think their flights were delayed a number of times.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
So, hey, you got some time to spare. That much more time to get liquored up, I guess. So when they finally showed up, I guess he was forgetting lyrics. He couldn't even get through a song.
He was hammered.
He was just a mess.
He couldn't even put together a coherent thought, apparently.
That's right. And he was doing more talking to the audience than he was performing or singing.
Well, he was doing half his songs and stopping and then starting to talk to the audience. I wasn't even finishing songs.
Right.
Now, before they went on, the band saw that he had brought a lamb with him. Right? A lamb.
Yeah, a live lamb.
A live lamb. Yeah. And the band even said to him, Jim, really? A lamb? Like, what are you doing? And he goes, this is going to be awesome. Just wait. And then they went on, right?
Yeah, and they went on, and he brought out this lamb and got up close and personal with it, I guess. He was even claiming he was going to
have sex with the lamb, which he never did. But
I'm sure 12,000 people would not want to see him have sex with a lamb.
Well, he was suggesting that all the audience members should have sex as
before
well.
Before that. Yeah,
he was telling him, take your clothes off and have sex.
And then he whipped out his junk for several seconds and said, well, you know, you're all here to see my penis anyway. So he whipped out his junk.
That's just a bizarre story.
And then he brought out the lamb.
But he never went through with anything with the lamb, just to be clear.
No.
Thank God.
For the lamb.
Jeez.
Okay, we need to have a lighter story now.
There you go. There's a fun one.
That just
is. Well, he didn't go through with it.
Well, it's messed up. Not. That's messed up. Anyway, all right. There you go. So.
Now, somebody that wasn't on dope, but did something a little crazy.
Who's that?
A political statement you're talking about.
Oh. I am. Sinead O'Connor.
Yeah, Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. That's right. Was it 1992?
Yeah, it was. It was. Yeah.
I actually remember watching that episode.
Yeah, me too. I used to watch SNL all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what happened?
Well, she was singing a Bob Marley song called War. She was a cappella. No instruments or anything, just her, some candles, a few candles around her on a table.
That's a song about injustice and war, right?
Bob Marley song.
It's really a protest song.
Yep. Yes. So she went through the performance. At the end of the song, she lifted up a picture of the Pope. Pope. And what did she say, Queeks?
She said, fight the real enemy.
Fight the real enemy. Then she continued to tear it up on camera.
Tear up the picture of the Pope.
Yes.
Now, the reason she did that was her protest against the cover-up and some of the injustice that was happening within the Roman Catholic Church that was trying to be covered up about priests and the abuse of kids.
Right.
But the general population didn't know how pervasive that was. And she had probably more information than the average public. And
it didn't go over well.
Yeah, took the opportunity to make a statement on live TV on a very, very highly watched TV show.
Can you imagine the people in the booth when she did that? Cut the camera B, cut the camera B.
I know.
Go to commercial.
Go to commercial. Yeah, but she suffered the consequences of that. Her career after that was pretty much done.
Well, not long after that, she was set to perform at a Bob Dylan tribute concert at Madison Square Garden. And she went out on stage and she was instantly booed. And one of the promoters said to Kris Kristofferson, go out there and, you know, take the attention off of her. Go, just get out there. So he walked
out. So he ran across the stage nude.
Yeah, that did it.
That did it.
But he walked out
Don't
there.
Don't look, Ethel.
And it was too late.
It's too late.
Okay. He went out and whispered to her. He said, don't let these bastards get you down. Just continue. And went back out. So she actually finished. She sang that a cappella again at that concert.
Really? That takes guts.
And then Kris Kristofferson went and got her back off stage, put his arm around her and congratulated her. He said he was proud of her. But she was not a very popular artist.
Oh, she was done after that.
Yeah.
Well, then a week later, I think I saw her at a Kmart checking people out.
Yeah, I'm sure that was her. No. Even today, when she's asked about that incident on SNL, she says, I do not regret it for a minute. And you just looked at something about, you know, she's owed an apology because she was right at the time to protest. Maybe not the way she did it.
It was just bad timing on her part.
Yeah.
Makes for great TV ratings, though, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
Anyway, that's on YouTube as well. Her performance is on YouTube for the SNL picture of the Pope ripping incident.
What about another Saturday Night Live?
I knew you were gonna.
What?
This is great. Go ahead, because I love watching. When I first go ahead,
what
say
the
first.
Ashley Simpson thing?
Yeah.
So Ashley Simpson was a performer Saturday Night Live. That didn't go so well. That was
hilarious.
Yeah. What happened? You get more info on this. They played the wrong track.
Well,
right?
It was her second. It was her second song of the evening, and her first song was one of her hit songs.
Yeah.
And she came out to do her second song, and she's getting ready, and the music starts, and they're replaying the first song over again. So they start playing the wrong song. So she starts to sing, or apparently tries to sing.
And it doesn't match up.
It doesn't match up because she's been lip syncing. So,
and everybody thinks she's singing live.
Yeah, and she's not.
Yeah.
We'll talk about why her excuse was later. But so she's standing there like, okay, this isn't the song. I can't sing. And you're playing the wrong song. And so she starts to do a little dance.
Not just any dance.
It's like a hoedown.
I'm sorry. That is funny.
So she does about, 10, 15 seconds of the hoedown with her elbows.
And then she exits the stage.
And then she just walks off stage.
No, she does the hoedown off the stage, does she not?
No, she
reminds me of a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Yeah, no, she walks off stage.
She said, I feel so bad to the camera. She said, I feel so bad. And she walked off.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was blaming the band.
Yeah. But seriously, you've got multiple choices here. Like, fake a heart attack, pull the fire alarm, but a hoedown? Where'd she come up with that?
Oh, I know. She made the wrong choice.
I'm so glad she did.
Oh, I know.
You know, it's this shit why the internet's great.
Like, you can relive that
stuff. Yeah, just to watch this stuff. Oh, yeah.
I know. And she, you know, she said that it was doctor's orders, that because of her acid reflux, she wasn't allowed to sing live because it was going to damage her vocal cords and damage her throat. And that was the reason her publicist gave later.
Whatever.
I don't buy it.
She probably hung out with Milli Vanilli.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on.
Yeah, lip syncing gone wrong.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I've got one here. I'll give you a hint who this is about.
Ow! I feel good. James Brown.
Well, that was a big hint.
That's right.
In 1988, James Brown, he had an office next to an insurance company. And he
probably needed a lot of insurance.
He probably did. But he rushed into this insurance company with a shotgun, claiming that the employees were using his washroom.
I'm just taking a wild guess here, but was he high on PCP?
He was high on PCP, absolutely, when the incident happened. And not only that, when the police arrived, he tried to flee them, led them on a chase, and before being arrested, and he served 3 years in South Carolina State Park Correctional Facility. So,
you know, when you started that story about him rushing into his insurance company with a shotgun, right at that moment, probably most people think, yeah, okay, I follow you. Yeah, I can see myself doing that. What else?
Exactly. You know, when he was younger, he was actually he was electrocuted. He was leaning against an air compressor at his dad's gas station, and there was a short circuit, and the current ran through him, melted his shoes to his feet.
And that was the first time he said,
I don't feel good.
He also pulled a shotgun on Joe Tex in the 60s.
Who's Joe Tex?
Joe Tex. Oh, come on, Joe Tex.
Sorry.
He's another...
Drawing a blank.
He's a blues brother, baby.
What?
And I don't mean one of the blues brothers. Oh. I mean he's a blues brother.
That's a show we got to do.
Oh, the blues brothers.
The blues brothers, Aykroyd and Belushi. Yeah, we got to do that.
Yeah, so they used to play at a common venue, and Joe Tex made fun of James Brown's cape. He had that whole cape thing, the heeled shoes, and because he made fun of his cape, he threatened him with a shotgun. He was going to shoot him.
Bet he never did it again.
Probably not.
Yeah,
probably
exactly.
Yeah, so that's James Brown, the Godfather of Soul.
So that was what, 1988? You said.
88 is when that happened, yeah.
Yeah, so one of the more tragic stories, the things that happened around that same time period, 1990, Curtis Mayfield.
Oh, yeah.
This didn't happen during the show. This is before the show. But a big set of lights broke loose from up above, came down and swung down and hit him from the back, broke his neck, and he became paralyzed from the neck down.
Wow.
Well, that puts a damper on the evening.
Yeah, no kidding. So that's a tragic story. I mean, he didn't see it coming and boom, it just wiped him out. And
well, he died in 99, right?
Yeah, he only lived for another 9 years, but he was totally paralyzed. And during that time, he was trying to
didn't kill him.
No, it didn't kill him, but he was paralyzed. And he tried to keep on recording and writing songs, but He couldn't really sing that well anymore because the paralysis had changed everything about him.
Yikes.
And he ended up dying in 1999. So,
wow.
But that's a tragic story.
Superfly.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Superfly, People Get Ready.
Pusher Man.
Yeah. So he had a lot of great songs.
He did.
And,
he did.
But it's, anyway, that's one of the more tragic stories that happened to around that time period.
You know, speaking of tragedies, you know, the Who just couldn't seem to shake tragedy. In 1979, during their tour, and this is just a year after they lost Keith Moon. He died in 78.
Obviously, the one in Cincinnati.
The one in Cincinnati. So they were playing a show where there was 18,000 capacity, but there was a general admission show.
First come, first serve.
And all the doors were shut, right? So there's 18,000 people waiting to get in, and you're right, it was like first come, first serve. And they opened up, and guess what happened?
And they opened one door.
pretty much. And
yeah,
I think there was seven people were killed?
No, 11.
11 people were
11
killed.
11 people were
trampled
killed.
Trampled to death.
And injuries to 26 other people, but
that's
11
it.
People died.
That's it, yeah. Yeah, that was terrible. And I remember the show WKRP in Cincinnati back in the... Remember in the 70s,
Johnny
and 80s.
Fever.
Yeah, they actually dedicated a show to that incident, you know, because it was a bad day for Cincinnati.
Yeah, for sure.
And the 11 people that died.
Yeah, that first come first serve seating, not a good thing.
Well, I know. We experienced that firsthand. Remember?
We did. It was a stick show.
It was a couple years earlier.
Yeah, it was.
It was in 1977. As a matter of fact, I think it was February 77, right around the time of the blizzard of 77.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. But we were waiting, and it was cold out. Remember, it was dead of winter. And we were waiting outside of...
Alumni Hall at Western University,
that's
London,
right.
Ontario.
That's right. And it was only my second concert that I was going to be going to. I was really excited. We're standing out front. And do you remember they opened that one door?
One door.
One door. I didn't touch the ground. I funneled in and never touched the ground. Not once.
And I was, you know, and you were my young brother coming up to see me at university.
Yeah,
and I thought, okay, he's going to die.
No, I almost died.
Yeah, I know.
But then once we got in, you remember what happened?
Yeah, your feet actually touched the ground and you beelined it.
Well, it was an opportunity. We were one of the first ones in.
Beelined it right up the front. And you pretty much crawled in front of the...
Tower speaker.
No, I'm sorry. Crawled inside of the tower speaker that was up front of the stage.
And then you said to me, what are you doing? Where do you want to sit? I said, I found it. This
it's
is it. We're going to sit inside the speaker.
Yeah.
By the way, it was great. Yeah, it was a great show. Sticks. It was really good.
That was good. That was 1977.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so
I'm glad the venues learned their lesson.
Well,
with all you older guys, because I've never had to worry about that. Well, actually, no. The only time I had to worry about that was on a Southwest flight. Seriously, nasty. They get nasty.
Yeah,
anyways.
Well, first come, first serve?
Well, they let in a section at one time. Then you just got to find your whatever available seat there is.
Really?
Yeah.
They don't have assigned seating?
Groups. There's group A. Then they let everybody in. You got to pick the whatever seat you want.
No assigned seating.
No assigned seating.
Right. I've never heard of that on a
flight.
It's like
a free-for-all.
Sure you weren't on a cargo plane?
Well,
yeah, that would explain the pot-bellied pig beside me. Or was that a woman?
No, I
don't. Sorry.
Oh, and with that, I think we better wrap up this session of Inside Rock with Oat,
Queeks,
and Cha,
the Jabber Guys.
You'll find a link to a Spotify music playlist at the bottom of our show notes for music that we referenced in this podcast. Remember to go to our website, jabberguys.com, to subscribe to our podcasts, Inside Rock, and Weird and Wacky Worlds.